PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 22 of Off Course. Got no guests and no mercy on the golf world. Here we are. I'm your host, Rob Miller. You can find me on social media, Rob Miller Time. With me, as always, is Canadan, Canadan Golf on Twitter. Don't go Canadan Hockey or whatever your other Twitter handles are to discuss this thing.
Why do you introduce yourself as Rob Miller and me as Canadan? That seems unfair.
Well, shouldn't I get you more likes and, yeah. and so forth? I'm trying to pump you up. So okay. Before we get started, please click subscribe on whatever podcast network you're. Whatever you're using right now, we appreciate that. And also tune into Range Days Golf Unfiltered that are also part of the Hackers Paradise Radio Network. We're ready to go. We're what Dan was saying before, this is going to be scrambled eggs today. We're just going to up our scrambling percentage in total with this one. A little bit off the cuff. But we have a few things to talk about. But I want Dan to lead in. I want him to go like full club pro guy and tell us about the round of golf he had last week, because I'm telling you, you're not going to want to miss this one. Dan, take it away. I didn't hear much about it, only a tweet and a little bit, so do it. I want to hear all the details.
Yeah, that's quite the lead in. In truth, it's pretty funny because at my house every year I have, I save my best round ball with the scorecard, and I use one head cover for my putter every year to avoid the lunacy that is head cover collecting.
Really?
Oh yeah. Yeah. One head cover all year long. Wow, and it goes
you're in the weeds there. I like it.
It's self-preservation, I guess, bank account preservation, PayPal preservation, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, that started, I'm on my fourth or fifth year of it now. So I get these little shadow box setups, these little boxes. And so this year we're in September already, and I've had a couple like 67 ish rounds, and I figured, you know, it's gonna get better. So I didn't save any of them. So I'm in September, my best round that I actually saved was like a 71, which is nothing to shake a stick at, but you know, it's not quite where I've been in the past.
Yeah, if it's not your best round, then it's not your best round.
Exactly. That's more the point. Is it would have been awkward to not have one to put in there. I'd have had to scramble. So I make a comment on the first tee. I'm like, got to play a good round this year, boys. I got to get it done. And the whole day, I got to, so it's 31-31. This is a 62. So I get to the turn at -5. I lip an eagle putt, -5. That's fine. Then I lip a putt on 10. That's fine. It's no big deal. We're okay. Then I rattle off three straight birdies, including another lipped eagle putt. So I'm on cruise control. I 8 under through 13 holes, and I've got nothing to do but just say, you know what? We got the number. I'm not gonna double my way out. I still got a very gettable par 5 in front of me. And then I hit the ball 2 feet too far in the par 3. It ends up down in the bowl behind the green, and I can't convert. So now I've got a bogey on the card, and I'm just salty. Then I rattle off, I spray out my iron approach in the par 5, and then I hit this like insane recovery shot to 2 feet for an easy birdie. So I'm back to 8. Then the next one's a tough par 3. So at my course, the final three holes called Arnie's Revenge. They're not the three holes where you score. They're the three holes where you hang on and hope for the best.
Yeah, I think I play at the only course that doesn't have three holes in succession that are named something.
They're me. Well, it's
good that you have that.
Yeah. So the membership named them. The truth is, the real name is the Trifucta, but people like, they didn't think that was good enough for a plaque, I guess.
I think it was Swedish. I don't know. I don't speak.
So anyways, I get up on the par 3, and there's water left and long and short, and there's bunkers right. And I didn't want anything to do with any of that. So I ended up going a little bit long and left. But on the fringe, I had about 30 feet, broke both ways right in the cup. Never a doubt. Next hole, I got this putt above a ridge. It broke about 10 to 12 feet, trickled in, no problem. So now we're at 10, and I look at my guys, I'm like, that's 10 under, boys. So then I hit a bomb on 18, which is one of the hardest and longest holes on our course. And I'm like, all right, it's a tough pin. Don't go in the water left, but there's a bunker on the right. And I hit the fringe and it bounces in the bunker. I'm like, man, I just ruined. I just ruined it. Because my course record at the time for me was 63. So I get in the bunker and I'm looking at the shot. I was like, you know what? I feel pretty good about this. And I'm telling you right now, Rob, an inch to the right, nothing would have gone in for 61.
Wow. That's amazing. So,
but it was weird, man. It was weird. Cause like the whole time, normally when I'm at that place, I'm like nervous and not nervous. Like I'm on edge is what, like I'm ready. I'm letting it bounce around in my head. And I was so focused on getting that stupid year long thing for the shadow box that I didn't even have time to think about shooting my PB.
Well, it's amazing that, you know, sometimes you do, you have your personal best, but you're not really aware where you are and you might not want to, but you were locked in. You're like, you might as well have had scoreboards up there, I guess. You were very well aware of what was going on.
I think the best thing that could have happened to me was not having a 5-footer on the last, two of the last three holes. Like once you get into a difficult position, it's no longer about, you know, I need to make this, I should make this. It's more like, all right, I'm going to give it a good run and see what happens. And let's just make sure we can make our par. And both of them happen to go in. So that kind of eliminated the potential to shake over a 5-footer.
Yeah. You don't get that Johnny Miller choke job or something.
Right. You know? And then on the 18th, I had a 2.5-footer. I didn't even hardly step up to it. I didn't pull the pin. I just stood up, put it in the cup. Like it was no big deal. Cause I knew if I had sat there and thought about it, that thing would have missed, right?
Yeah, you didn't get any, and there's no like club pro guy, like it's good, pick it up stuff that was going on.
Right, right.
That's really impressive. I figure, you know, we have to celebrate achievements here on Off Course. So I figured.
Yeah, thanks.
I wanted to hear that. And that, I don't know what 10 under is. If you add all my birdies this year, I'm probably 13 under or something. That's about it, you know? So it's different. But so I have golf news too.
Yeah. Changed your name to Robbie Hobbletime?
Yeah, I've changed it. I'm keeping it as Rob Miller time. Cause it's, maybe I'll change it to it's Rob Miller time because I got my MRI. I went to the orthopedic surgeon and he's like, well, if you don't feel too bad, go ahead and play golf. So really? the first thing he said to me, because it says on the sheet, is it says felt a tear in his knee when he drove the golf ball, and he walked, the surgeon walks in and he says, did you at least hit a good drive? And I'm like, dude, it sucked. That was awful. It was the worst drive of the year, and for many reasons. And you know, we talked about it, and he said, well, you can't really do, you didn't really tear it, you tore it like away from the knee a little bit. Almost like your fingernail, like bending a fingernail back with a meniscus. And he said, you can't do any more damage. So if you want to go out there, you know, feel free to participate in the club championship. He's like, I would go to the range, hit some short irons. I'm like, this guy's talking my language. You know, he knows golf. He's speaking to me. So I've got a call right after we're done recording here and call and say, hey, I'm in. Cause you know, if it doesn't work and I have not hit a golf ball in a month, you know, what the hell, you know, I might as well do it. If I have to withdraw, I have to withdraw. You only defend after you've won the previous year. So, hopefully I can get out there and actually, get around the course and Robbie Hobbles can, bring home the bacon again.
So he's back to Rob Method time. That's great.
Yeah, Rob Method time. I love that putter, man.
I know. I think it's a weekly occurrence that you tell someone about. I love it.
Well, it keeps popping up. People keep asking.
Nice.
Well, they don't keep asking, but I keep telling. That's good. That's
you know, that's the fun part about building your bag. I think people get so wrapped up in new equipment and what the latest and greatest, but I love the idea of having something available to you that's just so personal and so you have this emotional connection to, which I definitely feel you do have with your method putter.
Yeah. And it's not the fact that, you know, it was from the oven. It's more that it's so familiar and the, you know, the construction just really works with my putting stroke. So I'm open to trying other things. I mean, if something, it's just like with a driver, you know, you don't want to, every year you want to test something out. You don't want to leave yards on the table or, you know, to misdirection. You don't want to keep that on the table, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, you test that out every year. But with a putter, it's like, you know, what's so good about it is like lag putts, right? Like you're saying, like I was talking to my buddy earlier. He was in like a pre-senior mid-am qualifying. I don't know, one of those things, you know. And he was saying, I lag putted like, you know, Stevie Wonder. It was awful today, you know. And so, you know, that not having to worry about that, there's something to be said about it, right? You know, and that's number one right there. You don't want to have that 5-footer. I thought that was good in your story. You know, those 5-footers where you're trying to save par and it's kind of just this awkward range. 30-footer, you're not expecting it to go in, but there's like a lot. So you don't have those nerves. It's not a very nervy thing. And right. neither is a 3-inch putt.
Right.
A 5-footer is just a very strange distance to have them. So yeah, it is. It's cool to have a putter like that.
Nice. I just put a new one in the bag. New to me anyway.
For this round or no?
Well, it's been with me for about 2 weeks now. Yeah. It's a button back Scotty Cameron with a swan neck. So it's near to face balanced, which is kind of my wheelhouse. I love a face balanced putter. And it has instantly shown just solid production.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, that sounds like you're obviously rolling in a lot of putts when.
Yeah, it was 24 the other day. That was the number.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Congratulations. It seems like if you look at the numbers, you shot better than DJ.
Oh,
you know, he started off on with your 10 under. How about that?
That is an interesting point. And, you know, I watched a majority of the coverage on Monday. I think I napped during coverage the other couple of days. It wasn't particularly exciting. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, I went full send on Monday because I'm a DJ fan, unapologetically a fan of DJ. I love watching him succeed at the game of golf.
I know you do.
Unlike most for some reason. Who'd prefer to watch paint dry. So
it's really crazy that a few weeks earlier he goes out and he shoots 80 a couple of times. You know,
it wasn't that long.
No, it's amazing. Wasn't it Memorial? I believe. I think that's where it happened.
Yeah. And then they said he made just obscene amounts of money between August, I guess a month and a day or something like that.
So what do you think about the tour championship format to where there is, and I know there's technical terms for it. It's a head start. You know, let's just be honest. It's kind of like Usain Bolt being the fastest man. And by the time he gets to the Olympics, they decide after competing in world championships for the years, then it's like, all right, he starts here now. You know, like that's just like way in front of everybody.
But that's different. You can't look at, I know what your analogy is presenting, but it's so different. It's like that's more like going to the Masters and getting an advantage. You know, the whole point of the tour championship is to crown a champion of the tour for that entire calendar year. And we get FedEx Cup, hashtag FedEx Cup everywhere. You know, this, my issue, and we've had some really interesting conversations both on social and on the THP forum about, you know, should it be considered a tour win? Should it be structured the way it is? Does Xander Schauffele get screwed because he was the lowest 4-round total guy out there and got nothing to show for it? Which, by the way, is nonsense because that dude made bank.
Yeah, I know. He's pretty happy today. Yeah. I mean, it's just like he probably bought a boat on the way home or something.
Right, yeah. Yeah. So I think my basic argument to that would be twofold. Number one, there is no way that DJ would have played down the stretch or even the entirety of Monday the way he did without a significant lead. There's no way. You look at his putts on like three of the last four holes, he left them short with the intent of, I know par here is good. And you can tell.
Well, yeah, you know, situation is it always plays a role in sports. You can't say that this would have happened. Every action has an opposite and another reaction, right?
Basically. Exactly. So as much as you can dock his score in total, the fact that he had the advantage, these guys are absolutely good enough to play with a lead and to manage a lead. And I think that applies here. But the other problem I have is, look, it's how it's structured right now. If you don't like it and the tour doesn't like it, they'll change it. And until they do change it, I don't think there's any reason why you'd not consider this a win for DJ.
Well, I understand your points. And I think that I think a lot of this FedEx Cup argument, you kind of feel like you're on both sides of the fence, right? Like I can feel like talk about it on one hand, it's good because there's one winner. And then I can talk about it, it's bad because there's a head start. I don't care what you say, it's a head start. But, you know, you said that you want to crown a champion for the year, but, you know, FedEx Cup points are gone at the Tour Championship, and they do this manufactured seating system or whatever you want to call it, where, you know, certain players get a head start, some more than others. So you're saying we're going to crown a champ for the year, but at the same time, you're changing all the rules up for the last tournament too. So
tournament. That's the beauty of it though, right? There's no good answer here. You have six in one hand, half dozen in the other. You can say, oh, the points matter, so we can have a winner of the tournament and a winner of the FedEx Cup, as we've seen in the past. You can do it where they presently have, where they give you an advantage for the final tournament. I liked your idea of the match play, but the truth of a match play is it can become very unexciting once you get down the stretch when there's only two guys battling with a whole lot of delay in between shots.
And think about it from the rear of the field, the 25 to 30, they have like a 0.4% chance of winning. Can they theoretically and mathematically win? Yes. But, you know, there were a couple of players would have to get shot or something, or something would have to happen in order for them to really fall off. I mean, they'd have to shoot, like, you know, a ton of guys have to shoot 80 plus, and then they would have to go low with the 62 or something. See, a little nod to you.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen. Those guys are essentially all in the tournament. Excuse me. I did it again.
Tournament.
And they have no chance of winning. So they're in an event. They're just, hey, I'm going to make a minimum of $395,000. And that's all right with me. That's it. You know, so it kind of sucks to just be every other event. You know, I don't know of another one on the tour, even Stableford stuff. I mean, anybody could win that. It's at the Barracuda Championship, I believe. And that, you know, those guys can all win. But in Tour Championship, no, really, no. Those guys have no friggin' chance.
I'm going to be honest with you, Robbie. I kind of miss the old system. I, as much as people don't like to do math, I loved watching the final round and them doing all the calculations for us. Like, oh man, if he wins and this person finishes here and this person finishes here, then he wins the FedEx Cup. Like, that to me was really entertaining. I know it's not for everyone, but I enjoyed being a part of that.
You are reminiscing about the old FedEx Cup system. I don't know if that's ever been done before.
What's right? that?
I don't think anybody has ever said, boy, I miss the old FedEx Cup.
Like, no one's ever, if you're comparing, like, right?
Everyone's just usually, I don't like the system. You know, yeah. I don't like being shoved, the FedEx Cup point thing, being shoved down my throat for the entire year. And then you make up this right now. You decided to make up this crazy system for the Tour Championship. You know, the whole thing is they don't want to have two winners. They don't want to see Tiger and Phil up there at the same time, one winning the tournament, the other one winning the FedEx Cup. Which to me, it's like, why wouldn't you want those two on a podium at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, right.
Isn't that kind of awesome?
I think you're double dipping at that point. It's the benefit of two different things. And in this case, were that the way it was, and somehow DJ wins the FedEx Cup and Xander wins the tournament, I don't think that's how it would have ended up. But let's say that happens. I mean, that's not a negative thing. It's quite a positive thing.
No, they feel like it's confusing to the viewer, but I don't
just do a better job of laying it out there.
Yeah, I don't know. You're saying that, you know, with the when you were reminiscing just a minute ago about the old FedEx Cup system, and it's like, this is how he gets in if blah 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 finishes and fourth and stuff like that. I mean, that's the same stuff that goes on with the World Golf Rankings, which are just a load of a steaming pile of garbage anyway, right? That the fact that people don't play for the week and then they wind up being world number one because of how it works, and like every, I don't know, 2 weeks, someone like scores certain rounds fall off and so forth, or somebody who's number one, they play that week, someone else doesn't play and they become number one. I mean, come on, there's just a problem there. Like, why even keep track of it then? But, you know, it reminds me of like week 17 of the NFL season where all these bubble teams are waiting for this. Like, I need a Texans loss.
And to me, that's fun, man. That's different. And if you are sitting there watching a final tournament, this is one tournament of the year, which, by the way, I think pays out way too much freaking money.
Oh, that's so crazy. Stupid.
I have a hard time believing if you're going to watch a tournament that has 30 golfers in it, you're not already invested in their current statistics.
Yeah, I agree. You're right. If you're only going to have 30 in it anyway.
So don't tell me it's too confusing. Don't tell me people are overwhelmed by it. Just do a better job of laying it out.
Well, you know, PGA Tour, we're here. We're available.
Yeah. consulting services.
We work late as well, and we can talk about it. We can do live on air. We can
come in for a chat. We'll be glad to have you,
and we'll try to fix it. What's wrong with Stephen Ames getting beat 9-8? What's wrong with that? Come on. let's just do it. So Xander would have actually won if there wasn't this cheating head start thing. So Xander would have won, I think. Is it JT and would have tied with Dustin? Something like that.
Overall score. But it does come down to the same thing. Way to finish that way.
Here's a segue into our next topic. Is, you know who shot worse for the week? Was apparently Bryson DeChambeau.
Everyone's favorite punching bag.
Bryson. The guy I wanted to go in there and just blow up the course. I thought it would have been awesome to see, because it would just get so many people riled up. But Bryson does have a little bit of something to fall back on and rest his cap on, is that he led the PGA Tour in driving distance with 322 yards on average. Based on the measured drives, and that beat Hank Keeney's record set in 2003 of 321 point something. So he beat out Cameron Champ this year. The you know, there's an argument made that, oh well, that was 17 years ago. Hank Keeney, his record stood, but you got to dig further into the statistics. To me, what do you think about first of all? What do you think about Bryson, Mr. Protein Shake, going out there and just kind of obliterating golf course with his drives? But apparently we got to work on some short game there.
Yeah, I think there's a whole lot going on here. Bryson went out and accomplished what he intended to do, which was to get longer. And he obviously had success with it over time. And we're all sitting here questioning how long he can accomplish such a thing the way he's doing it to his own body. But I don't think that's the real story. I think there are two more significant stories to be told here. Number one, there are plenty of guys out there with regular swings that can do what he's doing. Tony Finau comes to mind, getting 206 mile an hour ball speed off a driver just messing around at a golf course. Cam Champ, who was like less than a yard shorter than he was for the year-long average. And Cameron Champer's hardly one of the guys you'd look out to and say this guy's a fitness guru or buff or a mad scientist crazy guy. There's nothing there like that. So has Bryson shook the way that people look at the game of golf? I'd say maybe. I think the fact that he's super polarizing is the biggest story here, because if a guy like Champ came out and said, I'm just going to swing hard and see what happens, which is basically what Finau did for a tournament and a half.
Right.
I don't think people have the same reaction. I don't think it occurs that way. I think the fact that Bryson just came out and said, I'm doing it my own crazy scientist way, it just created this unnecessary insanity.
Well, you've never seen, I don't know if there's an athlete in any sport who's changed themselves so dramatically and then come out and said, hey, I want to do this, and comes out with 30 pounds of whatever on him now and just starts hitting the ball. And he swings like long drive. Like you said, it's not a regular swing or typical tour swing. It's almost like there's no way that ball is going to stay in control. And he does. He hits it, you know, in general. He hit it really well, especially, you know, coming off for the restart. So you wonder, maybe was his body breaking down? Who knows? You know, we'll find out when I don't know if he's playing today in the Safeway, which is being, I guess there's a delay of fog and they have a fires out there. So we're watching a 2019 Safeway replay, which is a lot of fun. It's a good thing to revisit.
You know, I think this goes back to our conversation a couple weeks ago, is the whole Bryson experiment remains up in the air. You can't validate or create a perspective on something that occurs over the course of 3 months and say, this is what the future looks like, because he's not really proven, number one, durability, and number two, consistency over time. So if he comes out for the entirety of next year, which pathetically starts today, and for the season, and does the same thing, I think we have a real conversation on our hands. If he comes out and proves that he can't maintain that kind of aggression over the course of an entire golf season, I think a lot of people are proven right. My question is, if it was anyone else, would it get the attention and the frustration that Bryson's promoted?
I'm sure there's someone out there that we can think of that it might occur with, but it's just, you know, Bryson kind of is kind of like sandpaper. You know, it's very, very useful, but it can rub you the wrong way at the same time. I mean, I think he's fun for golf, and I think one thing that we've seen with him is if he sets his mind to it, he accomplishes something. You know, he does everything in his power to accomplish it, whether that's using an awkward putter, or, you know, a different putter than everyone else, or one length irons, or bulking up in order to hit it as long as physically possible. So the short game has been his what's it been for him?
Oh, don't do it.
Come on. It's my word.
Don't do it.
You can do it. What, on three? One, two, three? Bugaboo. Come on. Anyway, that's his bugaboo. And if he decides that he's going to change, and, you know, could he come out next year with, you know, wedges that are 2 inches shorter than what he typically plays? He might. You know, if he wants to do that, he'll do it. If he thinks that'll give him a better chance. So I think that will, like you said, we had a very short sample size during the pandemic and so forth. There were no spectators for him to possibly kill with his drives too. Like, He says that when he plays the Masters, he might hit it to other fairways because he can hit it far enough and have a better angle in that that no one's been done before. So he thinks differently, and I think that if he puts his mind to it, you know, we'll see something else. And he could decide, you know what, I don't want to be this big anymore. And then he comes back 30 pounds lighter.
He's sick of chugging protein shakes.
You know, I mean, actors do that for roles. So why can't Bryson just do that? I'm sure that's follow the same philosophy.
Right.
But hey, I want to deep dive a little bit in this yardage claim, though. So okay. I did a little bit of research. Hank Keeney led John Daly by about 7 yards back in 2003. All right, for the driving distance leaders on tour, 2003 was like Hank Keeney, John Daly, Phil Mickelson, actually. And I was surprised, Darren Clark. I didn't realize Darren thumped it back in the day. I didn't realize he hit that far. But, you know, typical names, Ernie Els, VJ, Sergio Garcia, Mike Heinen, whoever that is. I don't know who that is. Brendan Pappas. And then to get to someone who averaged less than 300 yards was Matthew Goggin at 10, right in front of Tiger Woods, 299.8. Okay. Fast forward now. And it's like, hey, well, you know, big deal. So, you know, Bryson beat him by, you know, a yard. So he finally broke the record. It's taken that long. But if you look at the driving distance leaders today, you need to go all the way down to number 73, Cameron Smith, who averaged 299.8 off the tee. Everybody above him, there's 72 people that averaged over 300 yards off the tee. Averaged, and they all have different measured drives. Like, you know, some might have 80, some might have 164, so there's bigger sample size. But regardless, that is absolutely phenomenal that it, apparently everybody is in that club on the PGA Tour.
So your perspective is there's been a significant shift in the way golfers play the game. And it's not just about the top driving. It's about the median.
Yeah. Overall, I think, I mean, you can't look at those numbers and say that the, you know, distance hasn't increased off the board. Maybe there's something that's maybe maxed out. I mean, we've seen those ridiculous drives of like 383 at some point and so forth, but
I watched Daniel Berger hit one 296 this week, and it plummeted all the way to 378. You know, that's
your favorite.
I think it's twofold, man. I think number one, the courses are being set up for distance with an expectation of accuracy, which is fine. But I think the other thing is, look at some of your name the pro dudes that you put up there on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Those guys are in like pants that are baggier in one leg than they use more material one leg than some of these kids nowadays are using in both.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they are thin, they're strong, they are just different breed of golfers. Athleticism for the game of golf has been massive. And especially when you look deep into the field, I mean, anyone who talks about golf in the way that Tiger dominated for over a decade, it talked about how he was the guy that was kind of different. And it wasn't until some of these younger dudes came out and said, look, athleticism is paramount to the success of this game, and I'm going to start using that to my advantage. And that's just where golf came in.
Yeah, you're not good. We talked about it on a previous show, is that, you know, all these guys they have strength conditioning coach, they've got, you know, mental coach, they've got somebody that's coaching them for when they go in front of the podium, every aspect of their lives. And then the tour gets involved, right, as well. I mean, the tour tells them, you know, what gives them certain advice as well on how to behave, a la like Happy Gilmore, right? So they're coached in their whole lives, and fitness is a big part of it. I mean, if you look, PGA Tour put something out there, DJ and his irons, and I think he was hitting I forget if it was the 3 or the 2 iron. He was hitting, you know, these are blades, and he was hitting it over 300. I mean, 3 bills with an iron that's a blade is just ridiculous. Now, he's super tall, super athlete in multiple sports. But there are little guys out there too that you know, thump the ball. Even Rory. Now, fitness, yes, but size overall, he's not too big. But
I think it's an education piece too. You talked about having coaches for everything. And these guys like Rory and Tiger, they leveraged the ground so aggressively. Same with Bubba and Justin Thomas. They use so much of that ground leverage to explode into the ball, creating power that they wouldn't necessarily have in their body. So, I mean, it's an understanding that there's not one way to swing a golf ball. Whereas you look at a guy like Gary Woodland or John Rahm or someone like that, just built like an ox, using a different method, just pure power. I remember reading Arnold Palmer books back in the days where he's talking about the best way to get good at golf is to have exceptionally strong forearms. And that was, or to create power is to have really strong forearms. There are different ways of getting about that distance. And I think that's one of the cool things that this is what I was going to counter with and ask your thoughts is, how much do you think this distance logic, especially in the last 15 years, is related to, number one, a comprehension of what the swing is, like kinetically speaking, and number two, the access to things like TrackMan or GC Quad, or, you know, just monitors in general, where these guys are doing everything they can to maximize their distance using this this data-driven analytics?
Well, I think that physical training and physical fitness, and then also the access to technology has fully changed the golf world in probably the last 20 years. Like, if we're talking this distance debate from the time of Hank Keeney, which was very brief, by the way, to hear, where, you know, you have to have the full game. But I'll tell you a story. I have a buddy that used to be a Bridgestone rep, and one time, at least this is what I was told to me, is they were fitting Fred Couples for irons. And what Fred liked to do is have a barrel or like three or four of each iron worked up, right? Here's your three iron. Here's four of them to try. Here's the in various configurations. Here's the four iron, five iron, six iron, just a bunch of them. And he would hit out on the range. And I don't know if it was TrackMan involved or whatever, but he'd hit on the range and say, "This is the one I like." And he put it back. Now I'm talking like same model basically and everything.
You just know,
like,
pure feel.
Yeah. Yeah. He's hitting him. He knows where he wants the ball to be, you know, he wants to hit his windows and so forth. So then he goes through and he spends all this time testing, and this is it. And they go, "Okay, let's go back to the trailer." And he said, "Okay, Mr. Couples, we'll put the grind on him," or whatever, and this and that, because they would grind him to his specs. And he said, "Well, whose are those?" And it was Snedeker's. And he says, "Well, I want to hit those." And he just takes the whole set and he goes out and he hits them, and he comes back and he goes, "So I want these." And they said, "Okay, we'll build those up for you." And he goes, "No, I want these." And they just took them. And that was it. He tells me that it's apparently a true story, which is amazing. But that shows you that I don't know if that would happen today with a modern golfer. I think these guys on tour are so ingrained, and you got to check everything out on TrackMan or FlightScope or, you know, GC Quad or whatever. And you have to have everybody around you giving their input, you know, with an iPad that's linked up. You know, it's, you know what it looks like. You see all the commercials and the footage and stuff. And I just don't think that kind of stuff happens. And there's something really cool about that stuff that I just don't think you get that anymore.
Do you think there's a single golfer on tour this year who isn't fully aware of their statistics and has modified their bag to accommodate their numbers?
Somebody, I'm trying to think.
Let me present it.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah. Can so you
20 years ago?
Can you use it in a sentence for me?
So 20 years ago, you have any given pro gets up on the range. Probably a majority of their experience hitting head to head is based on feel, launch, everything like that. Like you said, hitting to a number, hitting to their window. Nowadays, it's a different perspective, right? So they're not just hitting for feel in a window. They've got a ton of data in front of them, and they're selecting based on what they want their numbers to be.
Yeah, yeah.
So my question to you is, do you think there's anyone on tour today that doesn't fit to numbers, fits to purely feel, flight, and overall perspective?
Well, I guess their numbers are probably so similar, right? I mean, we're not talking a big miss, you know, otherwise. So I imagine
the question.
I imagine there's someone that does that. I would think it's not Bryson, but it's, I imagine there's got to be someone. But boy, I don't know, hitting a ball that hard, I don't know how much feel you have, you know, like I can't relate to that. But the vast majority, I would say, don't work that way. They are not looking for, like, I remember specifically for a hybrid, there was an Aldo Lechef that felt like awful, and it was perfect numbers. The guy's like perfect, and I'm like, I'm not playing the Chef. This thing is just, it just feels hideous. It feels like I should just be putting it in the ground and growing a tomato plant around it. I don't care if the numbers are on. It's like, oh yeah, give me that one. I'll take the other one.
Right.
So I don't think that happens a lot. These guys are so ingrained in numbers. They need to know their gaps. So I think, let me phrase it this way. If there are two shafts and they're similar numbers, right, and one, they would say, this feels better, so I'm gonna take that one.
You said similar numbers, so they know it there. So your answer is no. No one does it without numbers.
I don't think that they would go out without numbers. And that, like the couple story, I don't know if he was using numbers or not, but it was based on, he's looking for, you know, ball flight and what the end result and seeing it on a range. Definitely not indoors. Do you think a PGA Tour pro could go and just get fit indoors now? Best simulator technology, whatever that one may be, because these are things that I don't own and will never afford. Do you think that you could get fit on those guys could get fit on a simulator and successfully go out and compete with that set of clubs?
It's a trick question because I don't think they would. Could they? Sure, absolutely.
I mean, could they? That's what I'm saying.
Could they? Sure. Would they? Hell to the no.
Yeah, you would never. You would never do that. They could, because, you know, they could go in their backyard and not hit anybody with a ripping driver.
I think, and especially seeing some of the, obviously tour vans at the events, the accessibility there, they'd be foolish not to utilize that. But even when they go to their manufacturers' testing facilities, I'm thinking ECPC, the Kingdom, TPI, you know, these unbelievable sources for them. They're not hitting indoors, even if they have a little bit of time on the cameras. Even some of the camera based setups for these facilities are hitting outdoors from an indoor location. So no, I don't think it's realistic.
Well, you know, it varies. Everyone's quirky, right? And golfers are no different. I remember TaylorMade.
Neurotic is a better word.
Yeah, yeah, but they all have their things. Like, obviously, that's a. There are probably not too many people that would fit themselves like Freddie Couples and spend hours out there and just say, I want those. Just take another set.
Yeah.
But, you know, I remember TaylorMade Performance Center back in the day. You know, I don't know if you've ever been through that fitting with their 9 or 11 cameras or whatever it was. And you've got the dots, like you're recording something for an EA Sports game on you and all the reflective things in this old rack. 6-iron you have to hit, but there's it's pretty remarkable what it shows on the screen. And they were telling us once, like, Sean O'Hare would come in and he'd try to guess like the loft, like what he was de-lofting his club to at impact. Like, he could tell between swings, and he would go like by the a tenth of a degree. That was like 26.4. tell me if I'm right. And they would like send it back to him, because, I mean, these guys are good, which is what the PGA Tour slogan should still be, by the way. You know, that I
under
think
par.
Once they, that's been removed.
Live right? Under par. Yeah, because no one liked it.
It was awful.
Like, all right, stop.
there. I remember all the Europeans are like under par. They're under the weather. We're under the and then COVID hits. So I don't know if they're correlated, but
it's the tour's fault. I get it. Okay.
Never been discussed before, but you know, these guys, some guys are much more, in tune to numbers, but I think it only, as technology keeps advancing, then you, once you get thrown into that, you get hooked and you get not dependent on it, but you use it as, use it as a training and fitting tool, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't think it's obviously not going away. It's only going to get more ingrained, much to Brandel's, I guess, ire.
Okay. Well, I want to take this in a different direction, but I think today is not the day since we're at 45 minutes. So my friend, another great episode is in our rear view.
22 has come to an end. Yeah, that was fun. I have a feeling I know the discussion you want to do, and that's gonna be a long one.
Yeah, maybe. So we'll figure it out. Anyways, for those of you out there who've taken the time to listen all the way through, thank you so much. Please be sure to give us some love with a like or a subscribe or whatever you do out there on your podcasting services. We also do have a conversation on the THP forum every week about the topics at hand. So if you'd like to jump in, you can also talk to us on social media and give some love to our fellow podcaster on the THP radio network at Golf Unfiltered. Outstanding content coming from him every single week. So please do go give him a look if you haven't already. Roberto.
Canadan.
Have a great weekend, my friend. I hope if you do go out there, you don't do any damage and it feels good.
Yeah, you too, buddy. I don't want to have to change to Robbie Hobble time. So we'll give it a shot. I appreciate it.
All right. See you next week.
Later.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.